right, hello and welcome to Morning Energy Live. I'm your host, Andrew Gillick, and today I'm thrilled to have CEO of Woodside Energy, Meg O'Neill, with me. Last week, I had the privilege of attending the Woodside Analyst Day here in New York to learn more about how this global player in the LNG markets is thinking about the energy future. Add to the fact that Tellurian deal was not the only transaction Woodside's announced in the U.S. this past quarter. And I thought it'd be great to get a perspective from Meg on how some of these markets are poised to evolve. For those of you not familiar with Meg, she joined Woodside in 2018 as COO after a successful career at Exxon, where she held numerous leadership positions. In 2021, she was appointed CEO and is poised to lead the company through a very dynamic and challenging time in the history of energy. Meg, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Andrew. Good to be here.
All right. Before we get started, I'd like to ask my guests a couple of questions so they get to know you better. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. So, first question. What was the first concert you ever went to?
So my parents were big classical music fans, so I went to the symphony a bit as a child. But the first concert that I made the decision to attend was Huey Lewis and the News.
Ah, that's fun. My first concert was Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine with my mom, which was great. The concert I went to last night was the Dropkick Murphys, which was kind of fun here New York. All right, next question. Beach or mountains? Now, before you answer, this is a year-round commitment, not seasonal.
Yeah, so I grew up in Colorado. So grew up with the mountains as part of my lifestyle, hiking in the summer, skiing in the winter. I have the privilege now of living in Perth, Western Australia, where I can see the ocean every day from the balcony window. So pretty torn, pretty tough question, but I have to say mountains. There's nothing like going for a hike to clear your head and really just recenter on being part of nature.
Yeah, I can appreciate that for sure. All right, next question up. Have you been to more states or countries?
I'm
guessing
one,
as a global energy CEO, I'm guessing where this will tilt.
it's countries, yes.
Yeah.
Look, and I had the privilege of 23 years with ExxonMobil, having the chance to live and work in a variety of places around the world, really see where the oil and gas industry operates in Africa, Asia Pacific, live in Australia now. So yeah, it's countries.
It's countries for sure. All right, next, what's the best energy source?
So this one's pretty easy, Andrew. It's really hard to compete with oil. So if you think about the energy density, so you've got a commodity, a gallon of this commodity will take your car, call it 25 miles. It's safe to handle. It's easy to use. When you think about the value chain involved of getting it to consumers, it's amazing that it's as affordable as it is. And it's transformed life from where we were 100 years ago with horse-drawn carriages to a world now where people have cars, you can travel the world. It moves people around between continents. Oil fuels the ships and the trucks that deliver goods around the world. Parts of the barrel end up in products like plastics and commodities that, again, form an integral part of everyday world, help our food stay preserved longer, are used in medical technology. So it really is hard to beat oil. It's kind of the Swiss Army knife of the energy world.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. All right, last question here. What is the best sandwich?
BLT.
Ooh, I love no hesitancy. She knew it. That's good. Mayo, white bread, roll.
Mayo, how do you do? White bread, toasted.
Love it. All right, that's great. Thank you very much. So, all right. So before we get into talking about the recent acquisitions, maybe just tell us a little bit about how Woodside is positioned today.
Yeah, and it's worth giving a bit of our history. So this year we celebrate 70 years as a company, and we started life like many in our industry as a small explorer. We were founded in the Australian town of Woodside, or we were founded in Victoria, named after a town called Woodside. And we had aspirations of striking it rich and finding oil in the Bass Strait offshore the southern coast of Australia. That didn't pan out. And, you know, again, like many explorers, stringing together budgeting for one well after another, we went to the Northwest and discovered some very large gas resources that became what is now the Northwest Shelf Joint Venture. We're the pioneer of the LNG industry in Australia. We've been providing domestic gas to our customers for 40 years, LNG to customers in Asia for 35 years. But there's a lot about the company that's very much focused on having the innovation, the grit, the determination to develop some of these large gas resources that when we discovered them in the early 1970s, people said, gosh, what are you going to do with a big gas field in the middle of nowhere? So a lot of that is embedded in the character of the company. Now, fast forward to where we are today. In 2022, we did a merger with BHP's petroleum business. That made us a global top 10 pure play E&P producer with a real focus on deep water oil and LNG. We have a presence in the Gulf of Mexico, a business in Trinidad and Tobago. We've got operations that we recently started up offshore Senegal in Senegal's first oil development. And of course, we still have a very significant presence in our home country of Australia with our LNG business, domestic gas business, and a bit of oil production as well. So, global footprints, LNG specialists in some way, complemented with deep water oil, which gives us a bit of resilience. If gas price is down, we've still got a bit of protection from our oil projects.
No, totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I think at the analyst day, you said the company's now about 70% gas, 30% mm-hmm. oil. Mm-hmm. And so clearly you see a future in the commodity. So mm-hmm. which is why I'm sure you went and invested in the Tellurian deal. So I feel like this deal also makes a statement about how you see the U.S. markets playing a global role in both fueling the energy sector as well as decarbonizing. Are there any other thoughts or factors that drove you to make this such a big investment decision in the Gulf Coast?
As we've been working on our strategy, one of the things we've been doing is taking a real deep look at what are the energy products that are going to be resilient for 10, 20, 30 years. And that underpins our conviction around liquefied natural gas as a product that offers a lot of value to consumers. It's not quite as much the jack of all trades as a barrel of oil is, but when natural gas is liquefied, you can transport it so you can get it to customers, wherever the market need is the highest at any point in time. It's got that high energy density, again, not as high as oil, but still a very high energy density. And there's a lot of pipeline networks as well. So the utilization of natural gas, both for power generation and for feedstocks to many industrial processes, is very strong. And we think the demand for LNG and gas is going to continue to grow. So that with that as our sort of strategic thesis, we've been taking a look at where can we grow our LNG business most effectively. We have an LNG development underway in Australia, the Scarborough Energy Project, right. And that's to develop a 11 TCF offshore gas field, building on our existing LNG platform in Australia. But again, one of the things that's been clear as the market has evolved over the last 10 years is that we're starting to see, when we ask ourselves, where are there other opportunities to build an LNG presence, the U.S. stands out. So incredibly large onshore gas resource, tremendous amount of associated gas from the onshore oil developments. That's enabled the build out of the industry to this point in time. So we've been running our ruler over opportunities in the US for several years now. And we started having a more serious conversation with Tellurian late last year about, look, is there an opportunity for us to come in, bring the capabilities we've developed in Australia, bring the strong customer relationships we have to unlock the Driftwood project and really, take what has been a great idea, and a lot of work has been done on this great idea, and be able to take it to that next step and develop the project. And that's, very pleased that we got to where we did with Tellurian, which is the agreement to acquire them, which hopefully should close within a month or so.
All right. Yeah. No. That the deal makes a lot of sense as you kind of describe your strategic views. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found slightly different about your LNG strategy than some others, especially when it comes to liquefaction facilities, is how you think about that market. I think a lot of folks here in the US, think of the look, here's a toll, this is it, you know, and that's your margin the whole time. I think that Tellurian strategy was probably the extreme opposite of that, trying to capture the R between US and international. Where does Woodside fall in the LNG strategy? How are you going to, leverage your global portfolio with this asset?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's an area where I think many investors have kind of grappled with the question of where exactly does Woodside play. So if I talk about our Australia business first, in Australia, we develop the upstream resource, we process the gas, and we deliver it all the way to customers. So it's really from wells to the customer that we are involved in the value chain. We do that because we believe we have capability both in the upstream side. You know, the resources are discrete resources. They're very large individual resources. But again, conventional, so low well counts, complex facilities. And that enables us to really get line of sight from the wells all the way through to the end customer. Now, the U.S. model is quite different. And when the U.S. players started developing, it was with that mindset of just let's set up a tolling facility. So heavily debt financed. Again, they buy gas off the grid, they sell to a customer at the back end of the plant on that same price index. So the plant developer is not taking any of that price risk. They're just designing a facility on which they can achieve a very stable and predictable return, which has unlocked tremendous value here in the U.S. But we see a couple of areas where we have advantages. First off, we have the balance sheet. We don't need to have that financing model. Right. So that means instead of us having to give away the upside that you see coming out of those LNG plants in the U.S., we can retain that for ourselves. We have great capability in plant development and operations, and that's been proven through our Australia business. And we believe with the capability we have in our organization, we can deliver those same outcomes with the Driftwood development. And thirdly is the customer relations and the ability to create additional value for our shareholders by having a larger, more mature, more flexible portfolio. And I think we shared some examples at our investor day of, you know, little kind of case studies of where we're able to do that. And with a bigger portfolio, we also have a long shipping position. So we have long-term ships on charter. We prefer to deliver product to customer. We design a lot of our contracts with flexibility. So if we see a situation where one customer is really desperate for gas and is willing to pay a premium price, we're very well set up to be able to flex and to meet that customer's need. Again, good for the customer and good for our shareholders. So that more material position is an area where we believe we can deliver enhanced value to Woodside shareholders versus what a conventional U.S. player might have been able to do.
Yeah, it sounded like 10% of your revenue was marketing revenue. Was that right?
Yeah, correct. We started reporting marketing as a segment in our financials just to help our investors understand the value uplift associated with marketing. Right. It's about 10% of EBITDA. So pretty good margins associated with that business.
Got it. Okay. So understanding that and then sort of understanding what you've done with Scarborough, how should investors think about the Driftwood plant and the types of partners you might bring in to either develop or, you know, work together going forward?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, the Tellurian team has been around for 8+ years. A lot of companies in the industry know the opportunity and know the plant. And I think many of the folks, at various points in time were interested in doing partnerships there because it's an advantage site. It's fully permitted for the full capacity. Construction has started. I was actually at site on Friday and had a chance to go visit. It's an 880-acre site, so it's a huge site. And civils are very well advanced. So if you ask, you know, where is your risk in LNG plant construction? It's the civils, and that has been de-risked. So again, there's a lot of interest and a lot of awareness of this opportunity. The thing that's been really exciting since we announced the acquisition of Tellurian is we've just been receiving inbounds from all across the industry. And there are players in the U.S. onshore world who would really like the opportunity to get some of their product exposed to international pricing. So, strategically, an opportunity for them to access international market prices. There are strategic LNG players that we've done business with for a long time who would be interested in building out their position with us in Driftwood. And then we have relationships with a number of infrastructure players. And so whilst I said we have the balance sheet capacity to fund, we don't necessarily want to tie up all of our capital. So there's those three categories of potential investors that we're going to look to bring into the Driftwood project.
Got it. So like infra in and around the project itself, the LNG players, so selling some of the capacity of the facility down, so you're not 100% exposed
Correct.
there, and then
Correct.
potentially partnering with upstream operators who want. So that's a question I think a lot of folks are interested in. Will you kind of secure long-term agreements with producers, or how should we think about the Woodside relationship with producers? Or will you go produce it yourself? Will you go find a North American platform for your gas production?
So one of the things we recognize is that the onshore shale business is quite different from, LNG plants and deep water. It's a different capability set, a different risk mindset. So we'll be really thoughtful about how we partner with the upstream players. There's no urgency for us to get involved in an upstream position at this point in time, because I do think we, through partnering arrangements, we can secure the gas supply that we need. And as I said, there are U.S. onshore players who are feeling a little frustrated. They work hard,
What?
they produce this gas, and they're getting 250 for it, and then they know that their molecule is going across the Atlantic to a customer in Europe who's paying $10 for it. So I think there's a real win-win solution space for us, an onshore player who's got that strategic mindset, an LNG buyer who again has that strategic mindset, and then get a bit of infrastructure support as well.
No, that totally makes sense. There's a lot of gas here.
There's a ton of gas.
There's a lot of gas here. So as we're excited about this project and building out the North American footprint, what does it say about the Australian gas markets? Are they sort of mature, or you're pushing forward ahead there? How do you see that balance, 5 and 10 years from now?
So Australia is still a very important market for us. And if you think about it in the LNG context, Australia's got a transportation edge over most other locations. So we're very close to those Asian customers. We've announced long-term LNG deals this year with KOGAS in Korea, CPC in Taiwan, and JERA in Japan. So there's a strong appetite with those Asian buyers for gas from the Woodside portfolio, most of which is coming out of Australia today. So Australia still is a very important market. But when you look at the size of the resource and some examples, so Woodside is the steward of the Browse Fields, which is Australia's biggest undeveloped offshore resource. It's about 16 TCF. If you contrast it with the US, and I know there's probably debate as to how big the US gas market is, but it's probably closer to 1,000 TCF. So the US is just orders of magnitude more gas than we see commercially available in Australia. Now, Browse is important. We continue to work on that opportunity because, again, it does have that proximity to Asia. Whereas developing in the US Gulf Coast, you have to go the long way around to get to the customers. But that's part of why the US was so attractive for us, is there's so much gas here that there's an opportunity for us to come in and do what we do well and help commercialize some of that.
Before you know it, we'll see you on the West Coast in Canada building out a facility too, and you'll be all set with all the North American gas.
Well, we did, for what it's worth, we did have a position in the Kitimat development in Canada at one point in time. Worked very hard with our partner there to try to advance that development, but the site we had was really just physically constrained, and you couldn't get the economies of scale that you need with an LNG development. So we parked that. But yeah, look, there's a lot of advantages to the West Coast. It does have the same transportation advantage as Australia has.
No, but still, Gulf Coast is pretty darn good too. So
Gulf Coast is
we're
very
excited
good.
for that. So when you think about the LNG market, there are a lot of folks out there that feel the liquefaction capacity that it's been overbuilt, and that the world is in short order. It will be awash in LNG a couple years from now. Do you believe that? And if so, how is Woodside positioned to or insulated from such a threat?
Well, we do not believe that. And it's really fascinating. So the people who are gloomy and doomy about LNG today are the same people who were saying those things 10 years ago before the first wave of U.S. LNG started production. And, you know, if you look back over history, the global LNG market has grown 50% over the last decade. Our forecast is it will grow another 60% over the coming decade. What we see is continued buyer appetite. And I cited the contracts we've signed with KOGAS, JERA, and CPC. You know, these are 10-year contracts. The CPC contract actually has an option to extend for another 10 years. So we have buyers in these critical Asian economies making these long-term commitments to liquefied natural gas. You see the same buying pattern in China. And we would have seen over the last couple of years that buyers are signing up for more and more long-term deals, 20-year deals, and even 27-year deals in some cases. So the buyers are sending very strong signals that they are preparing to be able to use the LNG that is coming into the marketplace. So we're very bullish on LNG. We know there are other buyers that are a little bit more price sensitive, and you see their buying patterns rise and fall as the commodity price rises and falls. So again, as more supply comes in, you'll see some of those buyers be very opportunistic about taking additional LNG if the price is, you know, soft for a short period of time. So we don't subscribe to the glut thesis. We're very bullish.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess, you know, some pushback on that would just be the growth in alternative sources, whether it's a renewable source or, you know, potentially a nuclear source of energy, you know, over the next 10 years. And, you know, the certain markets not wanting to rely on Western molecules, I guess, is another concern. But if you're suggesting the client is looking for 10-year deals, maybe that's more powerful than whatever the rhetoric is coming out of their government.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Kind of the proof is who is signing up for what. And, you know, people are putting pen to ink or pen to paper, making those long-term commitments to buy LNG. But maybe to address some of those other points. So renewable build-out, yes, that's absolutely happening. Nuclear build-out, it's happening in some places. But again, it takes a bit more time to build out nuclear power capabilities. The fun fact that I like to share with people, so if the world is serious about tackling climate change and decarbonizing, the starting point needs to be coal. And the global LNG market today represents about 12% of the global coal utilization. So again, if the world is serious about tackling climate change and tackling the emissions associated with power generation, coal to gas switching is the fastest way to bring down emissions. So again, we do expect renewable build out to continue. We do expect nuclear investment to continue, but we also expect gas to continue to play that important role in the energy transition.
Yeah, I think that's sound. No pushback on that. So let's pivot a little bit and talk about that other deal. Woodside bought OCI. Maybe tell us a little bit about what that is and why you did it.
Yeah, so what we've purchased is OCI is building a clean ammonia plant in Beaumont, Texas. It's a really interesting structure. So they took FID on the project in 2021. And the scope of our acquisition is the ammonia plant. OCI partnered in a really interesting way with Linde. So Linde is building the industrial gases plant that's going to feed hydrogen and nitrogen to what will soon be our ammonia plant. Linde has contracted ExxonMobil for CCS services. So to be able to take advantage of the 45Q, the tax credit associated with carbon sequestration. So that passes through, and that allows us to sell an ammonia product that is lower carbon intensity than other traditional ammonia products available on the market today. So that's the what, the why. So as we've been doing our work to understand how the world is going to tackle this question of climate change and decarbonization, Europe is probably leading the pack with a couple of the Asian nations like Japan and Korea not far behind. in leaning towards molecules that can be used in the existing energy system but have lower emissions. And ammonia and hydrogen are those two molecules that are leading. Ammonia is probably really leading the pack because it's their existing value chains today. The world knows how to produce it. The world knows how to transport it. Work is being done on blending ammonia into things like coal-fired power stations, into direct combustion of ammonia for power generation, into ammonia for marine fuel purposes. So we see a significant opportunity for low-carbon ammonia to be a very competitive product as particularly Europe and North Asia look to decarbonize. There are legislative frameworks in place, and the most advanced is the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism in Europe. So I'm sure your listeners would be aware Europe's had a emission trading scheme and basically a tax on carbon for something like 20 years. Well, the outcome of that is that European manufacturers are disadvantaged versus international manufacturers of the same commodity who don't have to pay that. So Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism basically levels the playing field. So our low carbon ammonia from this plant that we've acquired in Texas will be able to come into Europe at a much more competitive price than any kind of gray ammonia. So that's the business case that we're pursuing. It's absolutely consistent with our strategy of thriving through the energy transition and investing in those low carbon molecules that the world is going to need as it tackles climate change.
We joked before we started that, you know, we could do a whole nother episode on just this. And I feel like we can after listening to you answer that. Maybe just one more quick follow-up question there is how big of a part of Woodside do you see this business becoming maybe, you know, in a year and then in 5 years? Like how do we think about, you know, the balance of ammonia and hydrogen in the Woodside portfolio?
Yeah, look, with any new energy product, it takes time for the market to build. And, you know, I talked about oil at the very beginning. The oil market today is 100 million barrels every single day. 100 years ago, it was a fraction of that. It would have been single digits. So it takes time for markets to evolve. And, you know, for ammonia and hydrogen, we're going to make our investment decisions in conjunction with the market signals that the market is ready for the product. The Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism in Europe was a clear signal that there is a role for lower carbon ammonia today. But we're going to be measured in making sure that we've got the customer appetite, that we've got the offtake agreements in place as we consider how we build out our investments.
Now that totally makes sense. Somebody threw a question in the chat that actually, I think, just pivoting back to gas for a second, that I think will be interesting to a lot of listeners. We've heard a lot of things about the quality of gas coming into the Gulf Coast in terms of nitrogen content and CO2 content and whatnot from different areas around the country. Is there a gas that you prefer when you think about partnering? Do you prefer the associated gas? Do you prefer the gas from the gas fields? Or does that really matter to you because it's processed and shows up the way you need it?
Yeah, look, we're probably pretty agnostic, actually, just given the breadth of the U.S. pipeline network, the variety of sources that are available. But those are the sorts of conversations that we're going to want to have with the potential partners that we're looking to bring in. And when I talked about partners, I probably missed an important segment, which is the pipeline network. So there are companies in the U.S. who specialize in getting products from point A to point B and have really fantastic networks. So that's another part of the dream team that we're looking to assemble is someone who can, you know, help with the pipeline that we need to feed the plants, but also ensure that we're adequately connected to as many U.S. markets as we possibly can be.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, so we're just about at time, but I got one more question. What's your favorite asset in the entire portfolio, Meg?
That's a bit like asking me who my favorite child is. The answer is I love them all equally. They're all valued children.
That's funny. No, I assume that would be your answer, but it does seem like the focus now for Woodside is definitely on the gas side, on the LNG side, and serving the global markets. Maybe before we close up, what would you tell, potential investors here in the United States as they learn more about Woodside? What's the most attractive things that you're offering here right now?
Sure. Look, a few things. We're a bit of a unique animal. We play in the energy space, but in a different way from many of the typical U.S. companies. We've got that strong focus on LNG, but it's not the tolling model that is common here. We look at the full value chain. We're able to take advantage of the price volatility that we often see in the gas markets. We've got a nice deep water complementary oil position. So again, we've got that resilience if oil or gas prices, if one of them's up and the other one's down, we've got the resilience to be able to take advantage of that. We're committed to paying a healthy dividend. Our dividend payout policy is 50% of net profit after tax, but the last decade we've been paying 80%. So again, if you're looking for high yield, Woodside, I think, is a great investment opportunity for you. And again, we're very focused on long-term shareholder value and generating returns year in, year out. And again, I think that differentiates us from others in the crowd.
Well, thanks, Meg, for that. I really appreciate it. It was great having you on, great learning a little bit more about Woodside here. I think people will be paying close attention to what you're doing there in the Gulf Coast in the coming years. So thanks very much. Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Take care.